So Parshat Truma opens with a major mitzvah. Parshat Truma opens with the mitzvah of Asuli Mikdash, the Shachanti Besocham. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Klal Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Klal Yisrael in Parshat Truma, and then Vayakel, Moshe Rabbeinu, going to come to the Jewish people with this mitzvah of making a Mikdash, and loads and loads and loads of details. Loads of details in Parshas Truma, when Hashem is teaching it to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then in Vayakel and Pikudei, loads of details in terms of the implementation. Him telling Vayakel Pikudei is Moshe Rabbeinu telling to Klal Yisrael, and then the Jewish people in turn turn around and actually making a Mishkan based on those specifications. The question is what you do with all of these details. One question, which maybe we'll talk about some other time, is when does everything happen? I think we've discussed in the past that while Rashi sees Parshas Truma as a response to the Egel, and Rashi understands that Ein Muktam Umu'uchar Batorah, that this is an example of the Torah presenting ideas in a thematic order rather than a chronological order. And the Rashi understands that Truma and Tetzava happen after Kisisa, meaning that the Egel came first, and after the Chet Egel, then Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I see the Jewish people are going to need a Mishkan and Karbanos and Kapara. That's the approach of Rashi. While the Ramban famously disagrees, and they will have a chance to see this inside in a Ramban shir. Ramban famously disagrees. Ramban says, no, no, no. When the Gemara says, Ein muktam u'cha b'tor, when the Gemara says that things could be out of chronological order, that's a more narrow rule. Ramban understands it does not apply as broadly as Rashi applies it. Ramban says it does not apply here. And if Truma Tetzav written the Chumash first, before Kisisa, Ramban says that means that it happened first, meaning the Hashem taught Mishkan to Moshe before on the first time on Har Sinai, before the Chet Ha'egam. Moshe only had a chance to tell the Jewish people about it later. So Vayakel Pikudei, which is Moshe is telling the Jews about it, that happens after Kisisa, after the Egel. But the Ramban says, but the idea of it was already conveyed beforehand. The idea of it is independent of Kapara. The idea of the Mishkan is really a hemshech, not a response to Kisisa, to the Egel Azov. The idea of Mishkan instead for the Ramban, it's a response to Yisro Mishpatim. It's a hemshech of Mamre Har Sinai. Okay, so that's in sort of in the biggest picture question. When is this happening? Is that Moshe Rabbeinu taught about the Mishkan before Egel Azov or only after? But let's turn our attention to the specifics. Right? You have Asli Mikdash v'Shachanti b'Socham. For those who are just to warm up, for those who are looking for Chasiyah Shavarmkeit, it's a quick Chasiyah Shavart. As I think they say from the Kotzker, Asli Mikdash v'Shachanti b'Socham, not b'Sochol but b'Socham. Not that Jewish people should make a Mishkan and I'll dwell b'Sochol in it in the Mishkan. I'll dwell among the Jewish people. The Mishkan is a way for Kadosh Baruch Hu for us to bring Kadosh Baruch Hu into our hearts. But that's the big picture. What are the details? A lot of details. Right after Vasli Mikdash Shachanti B'Socham, Torah gets into making an Aron, making Keruvim and a Kapores and a Shulchan and so on and so forth, the menorah and then the walls and the roof, all the many, many, many details. So you know that the Gemara tells us at the end of Maseches Makos, Rabbi Shimloi, the Amor of Shimloi says there's 613 mitzvahs. Welcome aboard. Rabbi Shimloi says there's 613 mitzvahs. Gemara doesn't tell us what they are. And I think it was discussed in the past as a big literature for several centuries among late Gaonim and early Rishonim to figure out which are the 613 mitzvahs. And that the Rambam, who is one of the most famous counters of mitzvahs, and the Rambam was probably the first to not only try to list all the 613 mitzvahs, but to develop a set of criteria, rules. He has 14 rules, 14 sharashim, by which you know whether something should be counted as a mitzvah or not. Should it be counted as one mitzvah or as many mitzvahs? So one of the Rambam's rules in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, I believe it's Shorash Yud Beis, is that when you have a mitzvah, and then the Torah proceeds to give you the different steps to accomplish that mitzvah, you don't count, says the Rambam, you do not count each step separately. It's one mitzvah with many steps. So he gives a couple of examples. One example is the Torah says, bring a carbon ola, and then the Torah goes on to say, Well, you have to lean on the amulet, do smicha, and then you shecht it, and then you catch the blood, then you sprinkle the blood, and so on, all the different steps. So the Rambam says, look, it's one mitzvah. It's not a separate mitzvah to shecht and a separate mitzvah to catch the blood and to burn on the mizbeach and so on and so forth. Rambam says, no, it's one mitzvah, the mitzvah to bring a carbon ola, with many steps, with many chelke hamalacha. We don't count each step separately. And the Rambam says, here's another example of where we count it as a single mitzvah, even though there are multiple steps that appear in the Chumash, is the Asuli Mikdash. Rambam says, look, the Torah says, make a Beis HaMikdash. So make a Mishkan. So that's one mitzvah. Rambam says, then the Torah goes on to give you all the details. You want to know how to make a Mishkan, so you have to make an Aron, and a Shulchan, and a Menorah, etc., etc., etc. But Rambam says, yeah, but that's one mitzvah. Those are just different steps of the basic mitzvah of building a Mikdash. So that's the Rambam's approach. That's the Rambam's approach. The Ramban doesn't like it. The Ramban says in his running commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Ramban says, making a Mishkan means making walls. So to build Krashim, that's making a Mikdash. To make the Urios for the roof, that's a big Mikdash. But the Kalim, the Ramban says, how are the Kalim part of what's going on? The Rambam apparently, sorry, Shechter presents it, the Rambam apparently understood the mitzvah to make a Mikdash is not just to make walls, it means to make a bayis for Hashem, means to make a furnished home. Like sometimes when you rent a house, you rent bare walls and you bring your own furniture. Sometimes when you rent a house, especially if it's a short-term rental, like a vacation rental, you're not just renting the bare walls and the roof, you're renting a furnished home. You're going to come in, there's going to be a refrigerator, and there's going to be a couch, there's going to be beds. So that seems to be the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. When the Torah says, make a Mikdash, so the Rambam says, yeah, that means a furnished home, walls, ceiling, and also all the kelim. While for the Ramban, the mitzvah is to make the structure, to make the walls, to make the roof. Questions? No questions? Okay. So, one question some of you guys might have on the Ramban is, one second, if the mitzvah is just to build the wall, Mikdash just means making the building, so then we should count making the Shulchan, we should count making the Menorah. So Ramban says, I agree with the Rambam, then generally you don't count those. He says that's for a different reason. Not because it's part of the mixed mitzvah of building a Mikdash. He says, no, the mitzvah of building a Mikdash, that's just to build the wall, says Ramban. Ramban says, you ask me, so why don't we count making a menorah, making a shulchan? He says, we don't count that for a different reason. We don't count those because, not because it's part of the mitzvah of making a Mikdash, but because of a different rule the Rambam has, which is that you don't count a hechsher mitzvah. Just like the Rambam doesn't count the writing a mezuzah as a mitzvah, or building a sukkah is a mitzvah. Why? Because that's not the mitzvah, that's just the preparation for the mitzvah. You build a sukkah so you can sit in the sukkah, you can live in the sukkah. You write a mezuzah so that you can do the mitzvah, putting up the mezuzah. So Ramban says the same is true here. Ramban thinks there's no mitzvah in making a menorah. But you have to make a menorah in order to be able to have the mitzvah light in the menorah. Ramban says there's no mitzvah to make a shulchan. But you have to make a shulchan. The Torah gives me specifications in Parshas Truma how to make a shulchan. That's all a hechsher mitzvah. A hechsher mitzvah, so you can have the mitzvah, the real mitzvah, is putting lacham panim on the shulchan. There's no mitzvah to make a mizbeach, says Ramban. The real mitzvah is bringing karbanas or burning ketores. So that's right. For the Ramban, just making a menorah, making a shulchan, making a mizbeach, it's not a mitzvah at all. The Torah gives me the rules, but it's just a hechsher mitzvah. It's like buying an esrog. It's like harvesting a lulav. It's like tying tzitzis. That's what the Ramban says. Now, for the Ramban, if you make a menorah but you don't light it, you've done nothing. Whereas according to the Rambam, making a menorah is a part of the mitzvah of making a mikdash. Because again, as we said before, Rambam seems to understand that the mitzvah to make a mikdash is not just to make the walls, but the walls and all the kelim. Okay. So far, so good. So we have two approaches to how to look at Parshas Truma as a whole, all the different parts of making the Mishkan. If you're looking at it through the lens of counting Tariq Mitzvahs, so again, the Ramban looks at it as Ba'asili mikdash, krashim, yirios, that's a mitzvah to make the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And all the kelim are being presented not as a mitzvah, but as a heksher mitzvah, so you can, after, once you make the proper kelim, you'll be able to use each one for the avoda that it's meant for. Unlike the Rambam, who says, no, this whole truma is one big mitzvah also in mikdash to make the walls and to make the kelim. Now the Ramban says, no kli is counted because each one is a heksher mitzvah, except for one. Who can tell me which kli, which piece of furniture in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan, mentioned Truma is not a Heksher? The Aron, fantastic, valid, right? You don't do anything with the Aron. I mean, you sprinkle blood on it, if you have it, on Yom Kippur, but that's not really a Heksher Mitzvah. So the Ramban, very good Chavra. The Ramban actually says, the one Kli that you have to count is the Aron. Because making the Aron is not a Heksher, and Ramban L'shitasa says, and it's not part of the Mitzvah of Asli Mikdash. So he says, okay, so there must be a separate mitzvah to make an aron. Okay, so that's interesting. So from Ramban's approach, that also mikdash is just making the actual architectural structure, the walls and the ceilings, so then he ends up counting the aron as a separate mitzvah. Here's what's puzzling. In case you have svarim accessible, you can take a peek, or else you'll just have to trust me for now and check on me later. There's something very strange with that in mind. You look back at the Rambam. The Rambam seems so smooth, very straightforward mitzvah. The whole terumah is just one big mitzvah of asli mikdash to make the walls and the ceiling and to make the kelim, with one mysterious gap. Both in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in Mitzvah Saseh number Chaf, number 20, as well as in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam has this mitzvah in the first parak, the first few prakim of Beis HaBehilchas, Beis HaBechira, which is the very beginning of Sefer Avodah. You look at the Rambam, it seems so neat and clean. He says the mitzvah of making a mikdash is both making the structure as well as making the kelim, and he proceeds to list the kelim. In the Frankel edition of the Rambam, he actually gives you a number. He says you have to make the structure and seven kelim. So if you have a number, you know that you're not missing anything from the list. And here's the problem. The list goes, he gives you seven items. He says the mizbeach, the outer mizbeach for karbanos, and the number two, the ramp, number three, the kiyur, number four, the kan, the base, the tray that the kiyur sits on. And then five, six, and seven are the items in the kodesh, the heichal, the mizbeach of ketores, the menorah, and the shulchan. What's missing? He has all the things out in the chatzar, the mizbeach and achoshes and its ramp, and he has the kiyur and its base, and then he has the three items in the heichal, the menorah, the mizbeach hazav, and the shulchan. But the innermost item is missing. The Rambam does not, ironically, the Rambam does not mention the Aron. The Ramban said you have to count the Aron as a separate mitzvah. The Rambam doesn't need to do that because everything falls under one mitzvah. But ironically, the Rambam doesn't count. He counts all the kelim as part of the mitzvah, except the Aron. The Aron doesn't appear anywhere. Very strange. Very, very, very strange. This is the case of the lost ark. And we need to find the lost ark. The Rambam doesn't count the Aron. And it would have been so easy. So you just say, there are eight kelim. It's the first item in Parshas Truma. So let's talk of the Pshat. So I think the Pshat probably runs something as follows. I later came across that when they published the Rav's letters, the Igros HaGrid. So I wanted something, the great-grandchildren and Rav... I'm forgetting his name. Several Talmidim published the Igros HaGrid, which are letters that the Rav wrote in his youth and learning, mostly to his correspondence between him and his father, and then some with others as well. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant letters, incredible. Many of these letters were written while he was a university student at Berlin. And you see, and he describes conversation in the letters to his father, conversations he had with the major Rashi Yeshiva from Eastern Europe, who ended up in the area for medical treatment or for other reasons, spoke to Rashi Yeshiva of the Mir in learning. Very, very fascinating. So in the letters, you'll find a similar idea. I think the Pshat is as follows. Rabbi Schechter quotes in Eretz HaTzvi Simon Yud Beis, a problem that the Rav worked on in the fourth parak of Hilchos Beis Bechira. We were just talking about the first parak, where the Rambam describes the mitzvah of making a mikdash, and he talks about the walls and the kelim, but not the aron. And the details of that cover three prakim, prakim Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. If you move on then to Parak Dalet, the Rambam begins the next topic, which will take him for three prakim, Dalet, Hei, and Vav. Now that he discusses the mitzvah of making a mikdash, Rambam turns his attention to the essence, what the item is. What is a kedushas hamikdash? And he gives you something the Rambam does a few other places also, to talk about the mitzvah and talk about the concept. So he based on Mishnayos in the first parak of Kehillim, the Rambam talks about different levels of kedushas hamikdash. And the Rambam, unlike the Mishnayos, works from the inside out. He talks about the most kedushas hamikdash is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then the Rambam describes how it spills over, you know, broader and broader areas to lesser and lesser levels. So the most kedushas in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then somewhat less in the Kodesh, and then somewhat less in different areas in the Beis HaMikdash, the Chat, the Azara, and the Chil, and the Sorag, and the Harabayis, all the way out, you know, to Yerushalayim and so forth. But the Rambam begins, you know, from the top down, from the high. He begins Parak Dal with the highest level of kedusha. He starts with the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He starts very dramatically. He opened up Parak Dal. It's worth taking a look inside. He says, Evan Haisasham, there was a stone in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And during the days of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Aron sat there. And the second Beis HaMikdash wasn't there. Where was it? Mishnah's point described that. The Kohen Gadol would go in every year during the second Beis HaMikdash. It was just a stone. There was no Aron. Where is the Aron? Literally. Not Aron missing from the Rambam. Aron is physically missing from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Where is the lost Ark? So the Rambam tells us very dramatically and very poetically in Parak Dalet Halacha Aleph of Hilchos Beis Bechira, beginning of the fourth parak. Rambam says, you know what happened? In the first Beis Hamikdash they had an Aron, but Shlomo HaMelech knew that the Beis Hamikdash might not last. So when he initially built the first Beis Hamikdash, he built an underground chamber and a labyrinth under the Kodesh HaKadoshim, under the Harabayis, somewhere under the Harabayis. And King Yoshiyahu was the last really powerful king of Malchus Beis Dovin, the first Beis HaMikdash, so he realized that the end might be near, so he took the Aron and he knew now is the time to use the great-grandfather's labyrinth. He had them put the Aron into the underground chamber, and that way when Nebuchadnezzar came a few decades later and sacked Yerushalayim and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he didn't take the Aron because the Aron had already been hidden away safely in the basement. That's what the Rambam says. That's the opening lines of the fourth parak of Hilchos Beis Bechira. That there was an Aron in the first Beis HaMikdash, but Shlomo HaMelech built this chamber and it was hidden away before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Now here's a question that two very different Achronim ask. Identical question and almost identical style, even though they're so different people, and practically identical teretz. They both want to know, why is the Rambam telling us the history? I don't understand. What's the Rambam getting involved in history for? There's no Aron, there's no Aron. Why does the Rambam have to tell us that it was put in the basement? What's worse is not only is he getting involved in history, which he does occasionally, but he's actually taking a stand on a historical machlokas. Because the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Nun Gimel, actually has a machlokas ha-tanoim, where is the Aron? The Rambam is quoting one opinion, which is Aron b'mekomo nigna, that the Aron was hidden away on location, meaning underneath the Harabayis. But the Gemara has a different opinion also, which is that Aron garlo l'bavel, that maybe it wasn't hidden away, and when Nebuchadnezzar came, he did find it and take it, and it was taken away to Bavel, to Iraq, and it's somewhere, and maybe in some antiquities museum, it's hidden somewhere in Iraq. The Gemara is a machlokas. Was the Aron hidden successfully before Nebuchadnezzar came, or did Nebuchadnezzar capture it and take it away? So you have a historical machlokas hatanam in Yuma Daf Nun Gimel, based on how to read the psukim. So the question is, both the Rav and Yaakov Emdin has a parish on Hilchos Beis Bechira, it's published in the back of the Frankel Sefer Avoda. Yaakov Emdin and the Rav both ask, why is the Rav getting involved in history, and specifically in paskin in a historical machlokas? How do you paskin a historical machlokas? Why is the Rav getting involved in that? So as we saw at the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, when we dealt with a similar question, why does Rambam get so involved in the history of the evolution of the halachic concept of marriage? So here too, the Rav and Yaakov Emdin both suggest, if the Rambam is getting involved in the issue, not only getting involved in the issue, but here he's even taking a stand on the machlokas of history, it must be it's not just a historical machlokas. What would you say? How could it be more than just a historical machlokas? Could it be this is taka machlokas in halacha? Any thoughts, any suggestions? So it could be, that's here. Very good, very good. Who is this, Ezra? Yeah, very good, Ezra. All right, so again, Ezra, you're suggesting that if the Rambam feels the need to tell us that the Aron was b'mekomo nigdas, maybe it's because al pidin it needs to be nigdas, or it needs to be there. This is what you're let's unpack that a little bit. What you're saying is that maybe the machlokas of Yosef of Yehuda is not only in terms of how to understand the psukim, what happened. Was the Aron taken or not? It's not only historical machlokas, it's halachic machlokas. In other words, the one who holds, as Rambam Paskins, that Aron b'mekomo nignas, that it was hidden away, doesn't just hold that it happens to be that it was hidden away, but that's also a halachic stance that it needed to be hidden. It was hidden away, and had it not be hidden away, that would be a problem, because we wouldn't have an Aron on site. Very good. Very, very good. So the Rav and Yaakov Emdin suggest that, and take it a step further. They say, and not only would we not have an Aron there, that would be a problem. Maybe the problem not having an Aron there is that we couldn't have a Mikdash at all. And you think about the what's interesting about where the Rambam places Aron. Remember we said in the first three Prakim, when the Rambam was talking about the mitzvah to make a Mikdash, not a word about the Aron. Neither in the beginning of Perek Aleph, where he sketches out the basic definition of the mitzvah, nor over the course of the coming Prakim, Parakim Beis and Gimel, he goes through the details of how you make a mizbeach and a menorah and a kiyor and so on and so forth. Doesn't say a word about how to make an aron. So, but then when he comes to Parak Dalet, and now remember his topic as a Parak Dalet is not the mitzvah of making a mikdash, but rather the kedusha of the mikdash. All of a sudden, not only does the aron appear, but it appears front and center. That's the very first topic he discusses. That's what the Rav and Yaakov Emdin suggest, that maybe there will be no Kedusha to Mikdash without the Aron. The whole discussion of different layers and levels of Kedusha and Mikdash begins with the Aron. If there was no Aron, we paskin, but Aron become onignas. I mean, the Kedusha, the whole Kedusha of Mikdash in all the different areas is rooted in the Aron. Shechter in Eretz HaTzvi, Simin Yud Beis, presents from the Rav, puts together different pieces, the Rav said in different shiurim, developing the idea in several Yartzeit shiurim and elsewhere, that's a generally true principle. That if you think about Kedusha and different types of Kedusha that the Halacha teaches us about, with very few exceptions, Kedusha, many different types of Kedusha are rooted in Torah. If you think about, for example, what has to go into Seamus and what doesn't. Gemara at the beginning of the fourth parak of Megillah, Daf Chavav, says that you have some things are called just Tashmishei Mitzvah, like a lulav, sukkah, a shofar, tzitzis. So once a mitzvah is done, it's worn out, it's no longer decommissioned, sukkah is over, Rosh Hashanah is over, so then you're allowed to throw it out. You have to throw it out in a polite way, not with the dirty chicken bones, but you can put it in a clean garbage. There's no need to bury it. Doesn't have to go into Geniza, into Seamus. But the Gemara says, but if it's a Tashmish Kedusha, something for Kedusha, like a mezuzah or a mezuzah case, or say for the tefillin or tefillin straps, so that's a Tashmish Kedusha, that's holy, and that even after it's no longer in use, has to be buried. The question is, they're all Tashmishei Mitzvah, and all mitzvahs are holy. And what's the difference between tefillin and mezuzah on the one hand, and sukkah and lulav and tzitzis on the other? So how come one is Tashmishei Kedusha with permanent Kedusha, the other one, once the mitzvah is over, has no special status? So what would you say is the difference? What do tefillin and mezuzah have that sukkah and lulav and tzitzis don't? What would you say? What would you say? Pieces of Torah. Gevaldik, right. Ksav shel Torah. Right? And it's the Torah, the Rav suggests. It's the Torah that's mekadosh. The Rav suggests that that's why a parallel din, that there's a din of kivura by a Jewish body, much more so than by a non-Jewish body. So how come? How come? So he pointed out that a Jew and a non-Jew could both be involved in mitzvahs, one hopes. But Tarek mitzvahs or Shev mitzvahs b'nei Noach, but a Jew is involved in Limud Torah as well. And even if a Jew who did not practically learn Torah over his lifetime, suggested that Agadat Nula Maseches Nida, about the Malach teaching the Jewish baby Torah in utero before he's born. So what part of what that Gemara is driving at is that you come in, a Jew comes into this world endowed already with a Kedusha that's born out of a connectedness to Torah. Hopefully a Jew is going to continue to actualize that and learn Torah over the course of his lifetime. But even a Jew who never learns Torah over the course of his lifetime, but he already came in with that pre-existing connection to a permanent Kedusha by dint of, at the very least, the Torah that the Malach taught him. The Rav also suggested Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael, which during the period of the first place of Mikdash was a result of the conquest, the Kibush. The Rav pointed out the Kibush, the Psukim tell us, the Aaron led the army. So it was really, the Aaron was being Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael. So that's what the Rav suggests, that in many, many, many types of Kedusha, Shabbos might be an exception, got to think about Kedusha Shabbos, most types of Kedusha are rooted in Torah in some way. Learning Torah, teaching Torah, an item of Torah, Ksav Shel Torah. So the Rav said, Kedusha HaMikdash also. That's what Yaakov Emden says. The Luchos, the original author's copy, and the Sefer Torah that was in the Aron, they were the Mekadesh of the Mikdash. And the Rambam understood, say Rabbi Yaakov Emden and the Rav, that it's not just that historically we hold that the Aron is still in location, but if that's a din, that had the Aron not been on location, there would never have been a second Beis HaMikdash. Because had the we paskin, that had the Aron been taken away, that would have been the end of any Kedusha on that location. And with that, yeah. Yeah, that's what it says in I believe that's the catalyst for the discussion that the Gemara has in Maseches Yuma about this. Right, the Mishnah. How would the other Tana understand that story? That's a great question. Let's take a look right now. That's a great question. You want to know, how does the other Tana understand that? Yeah, it could be. I'm looking here. The discussion that Tanam have is, I think I may have told you the wrong names before. Nun Gimel and Bey is Nun Gimel and Bey is in Yuma. The Gemara begins by presenting a Tosefta from Shkalim, and Sota quoted here in Yuma Nun Gimel, Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Eliezer says it was taken to Bavel. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, also says it was taken to Bavel. Tanam, tanam, tanam. A discussion, and then later on the Gemara also says, yeah, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, many Tanam were involved in this conversation. I'm just looking here to see if the Gemara talks about over the course of Daf and Dalad. I don't see that they can. Oh, yeah, here the Gemara does. Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, in the middle of Nadalim and Aleph, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, that we have a brisa, that we have a mission in Shkalim that supports that. The Maisa B'Kohen Echad, who noticed something funny about the floor, and he wanted to tell them, and he died. Yadu b'yichud, says the Mishnah, shesham aron nignas. Yeah, that's how that Mishnah understands it. The truth is, though, it's an interesting point you make, Ben Sion. It comes out that it's really a machlokas hatanan, because that Mishnah, the Mishnah in Shkalim that tells the story of that Kohen, understands that the reason why he died was because the Aaron must have been there. And the Gemara in Yumi even works on, maybe we can get a better sense of where in particular in the Har Bayis was the Aaron buried based on where that story happened. While the Gemara begins the Sugya Nigilim Beis by pointing out that the Mishnah in Yuma sounds the other way, because the Mishnah in Yuma's language was Mishnah Nital Aaron. Once the Aaron was taken away, and the Gemara points out, it didn't say Mishnah Nignaz when it was hidden, it says Mishnah Nital. That's a very good point. It sounds like really Machlokas Mishnah, Mamash Machlokas Mishnayas. Two Stam Mishnayas. A Stam Mishnah in Yuma, Mishnah Nital Ha'aron, the Gilma Beis. That Mishnah sounds like the Aaron was taken away at the Babel, while the Mishnah in Shkalim, the story with the Kohen, so the Mishnah, the Tan of that Mishnah, interpreted that story as indicating that the Aaron was a Ganos. So yeah, it's a good point. And I think, Ezra, you're right. It's worth looking into this some more. If you want to look more, look in the middle of the Ndala and Alf and Yuma. It could be that the other Tanam would say, that's not why he died. I mean, he died for some reason. It did seem miraculous. So maybe he found the Aaron, or maybe something else. Maybe he was a Nenash for doing some Aver in the Beis HaMikdash. Perhaps that's what the other Tanam would say. Okay. But either way, we see that this Machlokas Tanaim is already a Machlokas between two different Stam Mishnayos. Stam Mishnah in Yuma versus Stam Mishnah in Shkalim. That's very, very significant. How often do you have that? A Machlokas between two Stam Mishnayos and two different Masechtos. And now let's close the circle. So if you take the Rav and Yaakov Emden's understanding that, again, that the fact that the Rambam Paskins, like the Mishnah in Shkalim against the Mishnah in Yuma, the fact that Rambam Paskins aren't been Makomo Nignaz is not just a historical stance, but a halachic stance, that what? That it's the Aron which in an, not just created the Kudus HaMikdash initially, but the ongoing way sustains Kudus HaMikdash. And were you to lose the Aron, that would be the end of Kudus HaMikdash. So it could be that does not explain the Rambam in Perek Dalet. I would suggest, and he came across that the as I mentioned before, the Rav and the Igros seems to have a similar idea. And maybe that's Pshat the Rambam in the first Perek also. In other words, ironically, here's an irony. Remember we said before? We'll end where we begin. Remember we said before we have Machlokas, Rambam, Ramban. How to understand Parshas Truma. The Rambam says you have one big mitzvah of Asli Mikdash, and everything else are the steps of that mitzvah, the Chelkei HaMalacha, both making the walls and the roof, as well as making the Kalim. While the Ramban, remember, said, no, you don't count, the Kalim are not part of the Mishkan, but you don't count the Kalim for a different reason, because it's merely a Hechsher mitzvah. Making a menorah is not a mitzvah at all. Making a shulchan is not a mitzvah at all. Just a Hechsher to hadlakas ha-menorah, Hechsher to lecha upon him, and so forth. See, here's the irony. The Ramban said that all the Kalim are Hechsher mitzvah with one exception, the Aron, which is not a Hechsher to any mitzvah, and therefore making the Aron for the Ramban must be a mitzvah in its own right. The Rambam, on the other hand, might have held that only one Kli is a Hechsher mitzvah. Making the shulchan, making the menorah, making the mizbachos, that's actually a partial mitzvah of asli mikdash for shachanti b'socham. Perhaps the Rambam understood that, yes, a furnished home, when we say a home for a Kaddish Baruch Hu, a furnished home, so you have the furniture. Rabbi Donegan Eck pointed out to me the Bechor Shor, one of the more obscure Rishonim on Chumash. See, he talks about the different kalim of the mikdash as being divine equivalents of a human palace. You have the kitchen further out, and you have the lighting and the table closer in. But perhaps the Aron is the only piece which doesn't fit that rubric, because the Aron isn't really furniture. You could say it is, but perhaps the Rambam understood that's not, it's not the part of the furniture of Beis HaMikdash. It's more basic than that. It's a Hechsher to Beis HaMikdash. It's the step before building a Mikdash is first you have to bring in the Luchas. And that's what's Makadish Lamakam. Then you could build a Mikdash, which is walls, as well as the other seven Kalim. So maybe, ironically, while for the Ramban, the only kli which is not a hechsher is the Aron, it could be for the Rambam, the only kli which is a hechsher is the Aron. A hechsher to what? A hechsher to the mitzvah asli mikdash. Because conceptually, the Aron has to proceed asiyas hamikdash. Yeah, what do you say? Well, we don't. It's a good point. We would need to find the Aron had the Aron been taken away to Bavel. But as with the second Beis HaMikdash, Rambam says, we don't need to find the Aron because, don't worry, you can't see it, but it's on location. It's just deeper down. But it's still in that zone of the earth. So what worked in the second is a good point. What worked in the second Beis HaMikdash, though, is what would work in the third Beis HaMikdash. And I would close by pointing you, as Schechter pointed out to me many years ago, the second to last Halacha in Hilchos Sefer Torah. Perik Yud Halacha Yud of Hilchos Sefer Torah, the Rambam writes something surprising. He says, a Jew has to show incredible covet for a Sefer Torah. Unusually, he has a language, Yosem Yidai. You have to show, it's a mitzvah to show excessive, exaggerated covet to the Sefer Torah. And he said, that's what we walk with it. Well, we know, we have many minhagim that express covet for Sefer Torah. Rambam says, part of that is to have a special place. You can't just keep it on a shelf, on a table. It has to have a place, miyuchad, designated location. How do you know that you have to have an Aron Kodesh for a Sefer Torah? Rambam says, after all, that's what you had for the Luchos, so certainly that's what you're going to have for every Sefer Torah. Now, besides the fact that's surprising that we would compare the author's original autographed copy, the Luchos, to a regular Sefer Torah, but what you see also is that the Rambam holds that making an Aron is not part of Hilchos Mikdash. If making Aron part of Hilchos Mikdash, then it would have no bearing on a Sefer Torah. What you see from that Rambam, the Rebbe Schechter pointed out, is that making the details of making an Aron, maybe the first time around that Moshe Rabbeinu had a Haruas Shah to build an Aron in a specific way. But Ludoros, apparently, the entire idea of making an Aron is just a din Hilchos Sefer Torah. It's as Kedushas Haluchos. It's not a chelik of Tzuras HaMikdash. So that completes this picture. The other kelim, the menorah, the shulchan, the mizbeach, hazav, and so forth, those are a chelik of the mitzvah asli mikdash, and they have to be made in a specific way, and that's why the Rambam, in the first parak of Hilchos Beis HaBechira, talks about how to make the walls and the spaces, and Parak and Beis and Gimel talks about how to make all the kelim. The only kli he doesn't talk about how to make is the aron, because apparently for the Rambam, making an aron is not part of the mitzvah of making a mikdash. Having luchos there, and perhaps the original Sefer Torah, is not part of the mitzvah of making a mikdash. It's a necessary prerequisite to making a mikdash. The fact you have to make an aron is, at least ludoros, beyond the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, only and purely a din in the Kedusha Sefer Torah, and that's why it doesn't even, the idea of making an aron appears only in Hilchos Sefer Torah, Perek Yud Halacha Yud, and not in the first three prakim of Hilchos Beis HaBechira. So these are some of the ideas going on as you look at Parshas Truma through the lens of Tariq Mitzvahs. I want to thank everyone for calling in, and I hope you enjoyed, and I'm glad to stick around for more questions.